The coming and going of shadow and light, which made the walls grey one moment and the bananas bright yellow the next, seemed like a sign to Septimus Warren Smith, lying on the sofa in his sitting room. The sound of water was in the room, and the voices of birds singing came through the waves. Far away, he heard dogs barking. "Fear no more," says the heart in the body. He was not afraid. Nature was showing him signs on the wall. Retzia, sitting at the table with a hat in her hands, watched him and saw him smiling. He was happy then. But she could not bear to see him smiling. One's husband should not look strange like that, always staring, laughing, sitting silent for hour after hour, or taking her arm and telling her to write. The drawer was full of those writings, about war, about Shakespeare, about how there is no death. Sometimes he waved his hands and cried out that he knew the truth. He knew everything. His friend who was killed, Evans, had come, he said. He was singing behind the wall. She wrote it down, exactly as he said. Some things were very beautiful. Others were complete nonsense. And he always stopped in the middle, changed his mind, wanted to add something, hearing something new. But she heard nothing. And once they found the girl who cleaned the room reading one of those papers and laughing. It was terrible, for it made Septimus cry out about how people tear each other to pieces. "Holmes is after us," he would say. And he would invent stories about Holmes, shouting with laughter or anger. For Dr. Holmes seemed to him to stand for something horrible. He called Dr. Holmes human nature. Then there were his dreams. He had drowned in the sea, he used to say, with the birds screaming over him. He would look over the edge of the sofa, down into the sea. Or he would hear music and cry, when really it was only some man shouting in the street. That was the worst thing of all, to see a brave man like Septimus, who had fought in the war, with tears running down his cheeks. Sometimes he would suddenly cry that he was falling down, down into the flames. She would actually look for flames. It was so real. But there was nothing. They were alone in the room. It was a dream, she would tell him. But sometimes she was frightened too. Through his half-closed eyes, he could see the shape of her, her little black body at the table, her face and her hands, turning the hat, picking something up, looking for something. She was making a hat for Mrs. Filmer's married daughter. He had forgotten her name. "What is the name of Mrs. Filmer's married daughter?" he asked. "Mrs. Peters," said Retzia. She was worried the hat was too small, she said, holding it up for him to see. He covered his eyes so that he might see only a little of her face at a time. First the chin, then the nose, then the forehead, in case it had some terrible mark on it. But no, there she was, perfectly natural, sewing, her lips tight together. There was nothing terrible about it, he thought, checking again for a second and a third time. "It's too small for Mrs. Peters," said Septimus. For the first time for days, he was speaking as he used to. "Of course it was much too small," she said. But Mrs. Peters had chosen it. He took the hat out of her hands and laughed at it. How happy she was about that. They hadn't laughed together like this for weeks. "There," she said, putting a rose on one side of the hat. Never in her life had she felt so happy. "But that looked even more silly," Septimus said. Now the poor woman would look like a pig at a country fete. Nobody ever made her laugh like Septimus did. He would help her, for he had a wonderful eye. He began to put odd colours together. She shall have a beautiful hat, he said, picking up this and that, while Retzia knelt by his side, looking over his shoulder. Now it was finished, and she must sew it together. But she must be very careful to keep it exactly as he had made it. So she sewed, her strong little fingers flying. The sun might come and go on the walls, but he would wait in this warm place. There it is, said Retzia, holding up Mrs. Peter's hat. It was wonderful. He had never done anything which made him feel so proud. Mrs. Peter's hat was so real, so solid. It would always make her happy to see that hat. He had become himself then. He had laughed. They had been alone together. Then there was a knock at the door. Could it be Sir William Bradshaw already? No, it was only the little girl with the evening paper. Retzia got down on her knees beside Mrs. Filmer's grandchild, as she did every evening, with a bag of toffees, laughing and kissing her. They danced round the room, laughing. Septimus was very tired. He was very happy. He would sleep. He shut his eyes. But as soon as he saw nothing, the sounds of the game became stranger, like the cries of people searching and not finding. They had lost him. He jumped up in terror. There was nobody there. Retzia had taken the little girl home to her mother. He was alone. That was his punishment, to be alone forever. Where were the voices of the dead? Where he had once seen mountains, faces, beauty, there was a wall. Evans! He cried. There was no answer. Retzia came into the room, talking. She sat on the end of the sofa. They were perfectly happy now, she said, for she could say anything to him now. That was almost the first thing she had felt about him when he came shyly into the cafe that night in Milan with his English friends. She knew he was English, with his beautiful fresh colour, his big nose, his bright eyes, his way of sitting a little bent over. She had never seen him wild or drunk, only suffering sometimes because of the terrible war. But he would put it all aside when she came in. She could say anything to him, and he understood her at once. He was older than she was, and so clever and serious. He could help her, and she could help him. But now, this hat. And then Sir William Bradshaw, between 5 and 6. It was getting late. He watched her as she sat there. He could feel her mind like a bird flying from branch to branch. But he remembered Bradshaw saying, "The people we care for most are not good for us when we are ill." Bradshaw had said they must be separated. "What right has Bradshaw to say must to me?" he demanded. "It is because you talked of killing yourself," said Retzia. Thankfully, she could say anything to Septimus now. So he was in their power. Holmes and Bradshaw were after him. She should get out his papers, the things he had written, the things she had written for him. She emptied them onto the sofa, drawings with circles, stars, faces, waves, and his writings, how the dead sing behind bushes, his conversations with Shakespeare, Evans' messages from the dead, the meaning of the world. "Burn them!" he cried. But some were very beautiful, Retzia thought. She would tie them up. Even if they took him, she said, she would go with him. Nobody could separate them, she said. Sitting beside him, she tied up the parcel of papers. She was a flowering tree, he thought. Gazing from its branches was the face of someone who had reached a safe place, fearing no one. She did not fear Holmes and Bradshaw, the judges who saw nothing clearly but still made the rules. She had defeated them. There, she said. The papers were tied up. She would put them away. And sitting beside him again, she said nothing could separate them. Then she got up to go into the bedroom to pack their things. But she heard voices downstairs and ran down to prevent Dr. Holmes coming up. Septimus could hear her talking to Holmes on the stairs. My dear lady, I have come as a friend, Holmes was saying. No, I will not allow you to see my husband, she said. He could see her, like a little bird, with her wings spread, standing in his way. But Holmes did not give up. My dear lady, allow me, Holmes said, putting her aside. Holmes was a powerful man. Holmes was coming upstairs. Holmes would throw open the door. Holmes would get him. But no, Holmes would not get him, nor Bradshaw. Getting up from the sofa, walking uncertainly, he considered Mrs. Filmer's nice, clean bread knife. Oh, but one mustn't spoil that. The gas fire? But it was too late now. Holmes was coming. There remained only the window, the awkward and rather theatrical business of opening the window and throwing himself out. It was Holmes and Bradshaw's idea of tragedy, not his or Retzia's, for she understood him. Holmes and Bradshaw liked that sort of thing. He sat on the edge of the window. But he would wait till the very last moment. He did not want to die. Life was good. The sun was hot. But human beings, what did they want? An old man came down the stairs in the house opposite and stared at him. Holmes was at the door. I'll give it to you! Septimus cried and threw himself violently down. The coward! Cried Dr. Holmes, rushing through the door. Retzia ran to the window. She saw, she understood. Mrs. Filmer made her hide her eyes in the bedroom. People ran up and down the stairs. Dr. Holmes came in, as white as a sheet and shaking all over with a glass in his hand. She must be brave and drink what was in it. Who could have imagined it? It was a sudden decision. No one was at all to blame, he told Mrs. Filmer. And why he did it, Dr. Holmes could not understand. Retzia drank the sweet stuff in the glass, and it seemed to her that she was opening long windows and stepping out into a garden. But where? The clock was striking. 1, 2, 3. How sensible the sound was compared to all the knocking and whispering. She was falling asleep. But the clock went on striking. 4, 5, 6. She put on her hat and ran through the fields somewhere near the sea. They sat looking out at the sea. He is dead, she said, smiling at the poor old woman who guarded her. They wouldn't bring him in here, would they? Oh no, said Mrs. Filmer. But they were carrying him away now, and shouldn't she be told? Married people ought to be together, Mrs. Filmer thought. But they must do as the doctor said. Let her sleep, said Dr. Holmes. And she saw the large shape of his body, dark against the window.